And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Tuesday, February the 16th, 2016, 12:14 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Joined in studio this hour by Sean Kraft. Sean, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Here we are for another rip-roaring hour of current events here on WWGH Radio. And this is going to be a fun hour because we're inviting a man back to the airwaves who we have not talked to since I'm thinking October of last year was the last time we had him on. We're always glad to have him on. He is a legendary figure in the world of talk. Yeah, the radio world was his domain for so many years, and he had on everybody from the Lone Ranger to Abe Vigoda, who recently passed away. He is a classic. And Lee Merriweather, last time he was up here, joining us via Skype from Pennsylvania. We're so happy to say, here is Steve Boom Boom Cannon. Steve, how are you?
Who?
How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing fine. Okay. Sean, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you, Steve?
I'm not too bad. So you still have the millstone around your neck, eh, Sean?
Oh, yes, I sure do.
I'm kidding.
After that beautiful introduction, Steve, oh my
I'm
goodness.
Kidding.
Well, how you been? We haven't talked to you.
The funny part about it is I've been watching a lot of Rickles videos on YouTube, and they are absolutely hilarious, but I'm afraid I'm acquiring some of his approach through osmosis, and I'm not sure why. Anyway.
Well, you know, Steve, as I say, we haven't had a chance to catch up with you since around the beginning of October of last year. What's new? What have you been doing?
Well, basically, I've been hanging out. I am planning to make a trip in April back to Parsippany, New Jersey, of all places, where there's going to be another Chiller Theater event with a Monkees reunion and a Chips reunion. I'm also planning to visit some friends and family in Florida. And other than that, not too much.
Everything sounds great. Living the good life.
Well, relaxing anyway. Good life takes money. That I don't have.
Well, we do what we can.
Yes.
Steve, it's great to have you on. Oh, who's going to be at this big event coming up, by the way, in New Jersey?
Well, as I mentioned, there is going to be a Chips reunion. I interviewed the last time I was on with you on WWGH. I had Larry Wilcox with me. Larry and Eric Estrada and Robert Pine, who played Catrere, are going to reunite for this Chiller Theater event. It's going to be 3 days, and they're going to be signing autographs, taking pictures, doing interviews, that whole thing. Peter Tork and Mickey Dolenz are, in fact, touring from time to time and will be appearing there not only as guests for autograph sessions, but they'll be performing a medley of Monkees hits at a Saturday night concert they're going to have at the Parsippany Sheraton. And with them will be a guy by the name of Bobby Hart. Now, for those who may remember some of the one-hit wonders of the 60s, Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart had one or two substantial hits, but they primarily were songwriters, and much of the Monkees' music was, in fact, except for the obvious songs which they took from people like Neil Diamond, were written by Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart. So Bobby Hart's going to be there and going to be performing as well. There are a number of other talents. I did not bring my list with me, but that's just a partial list of what's going to be happening Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday at the Parsippany, New Jersey, of all places, Sheraton Inn, which is a gorgeous hotel. It's beautiful.
You know, we're getting a call here, Steve, and let's hope this is the non-air call. Hey, you're live on WWGH Radio. Go ahead.
Is your psychic in today?
No, the psychic was yesterday. The psychic is every Monday from 1:10 to 2 o'clock.
Well, thank
now, wait a minute. I want to interject myself here, if I may.
Interject.
One of the things that we did on the Canon Late Night Radio Rampage, because I am of Russian and Polish heritage, my name may have in the old country been Kananovsky. So I am the great Kananovsky, and I can psychically predict three things about this lady that are not true. Are you ready, ma'am?
Yes.
Okay. Three things about you that are not true. You are not as strong a tennis player as Arthur Ashe was. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Number two, there has been no indication that you will, in the near future, own a Bentley. Is that also true?
Yes.
Okay. Now, is it also true that you do not live in Poughkeepsie, New York?
That's true.
All right, three things about you that aren't true. I predicted them.
You're smart.
they don't call him the great Kananowski for nothing.
Yeah. Good to meet you, ma'am. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, caller.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Boy, and she beat me to the jump because during this hour, even though it is not psychic hour, we will be taking phone calls because of the Skype technology. We can do that. How'd you hear the caller there, Steve?
The caller came in okay. There was a bit of a delay or a lag between you and me. That seems to have corrected itself.
Well, that sounds good. I think our Skype just had to catch up. But the telephone number for people out there listening, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Steve, did you ever think years ago when you started in radio that we'd be able to have somebody calling in through a computer, taking phones through calls through a phone line, and two people sitting in the studio engineering it all?
Well, I knew it was happening because basically my first job in radio was working for one of the legends in talk radio. This is now in the early 60s. Jerry Williams hired me to produce his show while I was still in broadcasting school. So I knew what was coming. The technology was developing as we spoke. But the fact that I can be sitting at my dining room table in my leisure pants and a Henley top and talking to the audience in Marion, Ohio and elsewhere is really kind of amazing to me.
It is a great world. Well, we are going to get into these current events because who knows, maybe the audience out there would like to weigh in on them, and maybe Sean would like to as well. 740-383-9944. And as I say, since we talked to Steve last October, man, oh man, have things gotten different in the world. And you cannot not, you know, I've tried to put these current event shows, because we still do the current event show every Friday here on WWGH. I've tried to put them together some weeks without talking about politics. But in an election year and with the candidates we got, it is almost impossible. Politics is driving the news cycle, period.
Absolutely. And I think it's a good thing. And very honestly, we are seeing, I think, more involvement by the voter now that two, for lack of a better term, outsiders like Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are involved in it. And I think that's a good thing, because I think Republicans, Democrats, Independents, and others are following this election cycle very closely, which will, in fact, I hope, help them make an appropriate decision when the election comes around in November.
Well, let's talk about the gentleman himself, because I know Sean has a lot of opinions about this man, and I think Steve might as well, so we'll get right into it. Now, stick with me here, because this is an interesting story, and I want everybody to have the facts. Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump says he's very seriously considering suing GOP rival Senator Ted Cruz. "I'm thinking about it very seriously," Trump told ABC News' George Stephanopoulos on Good Morning America this morning. "I've never dealt with anybody who lies like him." Trump pointed to his own positions on gun rights as well as dismantling of President Obama's signature health care law, saying that the Texas senator was misleading voters about his stances. "Ted Cruz is a liar," he said. "I think he's a very unstable person. I have never had somebody take something you believe in and say the exact opposite." Trump also criticized Cruz over mailers from his campaign in Iowa, which claimed some voters had a voter violation. But he did to Ben Carson. "What he did to Ben Carson was a disgrace," Trump said. "The election in Iowa should be taken away from him." Trump also continued his criticism of former President George W. Bush for his handling of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. "Had we had my immigration policies in effect, some people wouldn't have been in the country for the most part," Trump said. "I don't know if Bush lied or not. I know the CIA and other agencies knew something bad was going to happen. They did nothing about it." Bush, who was on the campaign trail with his brother Jeb last night, stood by his leadership. "Strength is not empty rhetoric. It's not bluster. It's not theatrics," George W. Bush said. "This is a serious election for a serious job." So that is this morning, Steve. What do you think?
Well, very honestly, I am quite pleased to see that W took the tact that he did. Theatrics and bluster. Two words which I think, I know, indicate his response to Donald Trump's campaign to this moment without mentioning Donald Trump by name. And I thought that was very astute political maneuvering. You don't mention the guy's name, but you use words that people can understand. Did people in the government know something at the time of 9/11? They could very well have. And because 9/11 was such a disaster, they just chose, I'm thinking, not to say anything. Whether that's right or wrong, that's a decision that you, the voters, have to make. But anyway, that's my take on it. Sean, what about you?
My opinion is, didn't they get some kind of fax or something, Scott, we talked about?
Well, there was a letter that did come down that they say was in front of some people, one of those being Condoleezza Rice, who was in a smaller position at that time in 2001. She was not Secretary of State yet. That said, in a briefing, that there might be plans to attack buildings with planes. Now, I don't know the exact wording of that, but that was the idea. So did they know? I don't know. And I certainly would never want to put that on George W. Bush or anybody in that administration, but was it a failure by the CIA? Was it a failure by the airlines? Was it a failure by people who were on the ground? Why was the command center for New York in the World Trade Center? Wasn't that a bad place to have it after they blew up the parking garage in 93?
I would say so.
Yeah, so I think a lot of things went wrong that day, and oddly enough that we bring this up, or Donald Trump's bringing this up, he must be working with the booker for my show, because this coming Thursday at 12:10 to 1 p.m., we're going to have an architect on who is one of the members of the 9/11 Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, so that should be interesting.
Now, do you, how do I put this properly, do you discount the conspiracy theorists' view that, in fact, we were somehow involved in allowing 9/11 to happen?
Do I discount that? I think being in radio and I interviewing politicians and so on and so forth, trying to be more news than opinion, I really do try not to discredit anything. As horrible as the opinion might be by somebody, I try not to discredit it. My first reaction is to ask a question about it. You still there, Steve?
Oh, okay. It's been cutting out from time to time, so I thought maybe there was a cutout and you hadn't finished yet.
No. I have a hard time discrediting anything that I don't have the facts on.
Okay. All right. I understand. And there are still, they're minimal at this point, but there still are conspiracy theorists that believe that, in fact, we knew about that and really kind of let it happen to give us a reason to go to war, like, for instance, the sinking of the battleship Maine and the Spanish-American War, that kind of thing.
Gulf of Tonkin, which McNamara came out in his later years and said didn't happen.
Yep.
Which got us
I guess one of the things that also really concerns me about 9/11 and the decades that have followed is the fact that although I'm sure that our intelligence community is trying very hard to get the information they need in advance to prevent this kind of thing from happening again. And in fact, we have indeed foiled a number of plots. But I think if Wild Bill Donovan were alive today, the head of the OSS during World War II, he would be really unhappy with the failure of our intelligence community to get sufficient information. Sufficient information that could have, in fact, stopped 9/11 from happening.
It was very interesting. Sean, what's your feeling on 9/11?
Well, I have a lot of mixed feelings on that. It was certainly sad all the way around, but I guess my concern is didn't we know that the planes was heading in the wrong direction? Because, you get these drones now, you can control them remotely. You can override the pilot. I'm not saying it's what it is. I don't know how much that, you know, jet weighs. But I know they have a way of controlling it. Right, Steve?
Yes, indeed. And they were, I guess, the only thing I can say is that they were aware that two planes had, in fact, been diverted in some way, shape, or form. But I don't think they reacted quickly enough, government agencies. And I guess, Sean, also my question to you has to be, do you think that if we knew about the diverting of the planes early enough, that the Air Force should have come in and shot down those two airliners?
That's a good question, because, you know, there was a lot of innocent people on those planes.
True.
But there was a lot more people that got killed in the 9/11. That's a good question. And I don't know. I guess I don't know how to answer that question.
Scott, what do you think?
I don't know. I think you probably should have a safety protocol in this country that, for good or bad, is going to be what you do in those situations. And I thought we did, to be honest with you, because it was my understanding, not too long before that, do you remember when the golfer Payne Stewart's plane, and this is not a big, big plane, but the golfer Payne Stewart's plane, something happened.
You're cutting out again.
Okay, but when Payne Stewart's plane was up in the air, yes, not too long before this, something happened in the cockpit that knocked everybody out, knocked the pilot out, knocked Payne out, and I think ended up in a lot of the death there. I don't remember exactly what the cause was, but I do know that the Air Force, when they lost contact with that plane, had military jets up on the wings of that plane within minutes, and were going to shoot it down had it approached any residential neighborhoods.
Oh, so, absolutely.
So why didn't that happen here? I don't know.
That's a good question, and if anybody has a thought or a feeling on that sort of action under those circumstances, I hope they'll call.
Yeah, 740-383-9944. But maybe even the bigger... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I guess what my biggest concern is, well, you know, we had a lot of innocent people on those jets. Now, why should we kill... I mean, they was going to get killed regardless, I guess, in the way, which is a sad thing. But it's just... I don't know. I guess...
Well, what's the alternative? How do you stop them from hitting the buildings, and how do you keep the people alive on the plane?
Again, I'm pretty sure you can remotely control any airline. Now, if... they had a seat, because the airport is what is it, Steve? Correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't it like maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes away from the World Trade Center building?
When it took off? Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so they had, within 5 minutes, they had to see the plane was going the opposite direction.
Well, let me ask you this. If you can remotely control any plane in the sky then and today, why do we have such vigorous checkpoints at the airport?
I'm pretty sure you can control a plane, right, Steve? Am I wrong on that?
I think you can, but I'm not really sure, so I'm not going to say unless I know for sure.
Because, I mean, really, if we can control planes remote controlly, if that were true and we can land them without any pilot in there, then why do we have pilots and why are we checking people at the airport?
Well, I'm pretty sure, now, I'm not a pilot, but I'm pretty sure the only way the pilot is to take off. And I'm pretty sure that's all, because the autopilot kicks in, I believe.
So then who flew the plane into the building?
Well, obviously they overrode the autopilot, but...
Well, if you can override it, then I guess you're out of luck anyway.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure you can... you got to be able to override it, but...
Now, here's the thing also, and when you consider this created situation logically, think about this for a second. Yes, you do have the ability, let's say, in quotes, to override the operating systems of the plane and handle it while you're not in the cockpit. Let's say we have that, okay? Why not make sure that kind of situation doesn't present itself by being sure that we are checked properly at the gates before we board the plane?
We're having a call here. Caller, you're here.
I have one comment about that. I don't know myself. You know, I'm not a pilot. But I don't know if... even the ability to remotely go in and take charge of a plane would be a too good an idea. The reason being, hackers the way they are today, I'm sure ISIS or anyone else could figure out a way to get in there and take charge of that plane without even bothering to lose one of their people.
That's true.
That very well could be.
Indeed. So we would suffer. It would be much more dangerous to have hackers hitting the daggone thing.
I think the you could be right.
The more computerization you have, the larger chance you have, sir, of what you talked about. Hackers wanting to test their computer skills by getting into secure systems like that. So yeah, I think you're making a good point.
Hey, thank you, caller.
Sure.
Bye-bye. Right.
Thank you.
And again, the phone lines are open. If you'd like to weigh in, 740-383-9944. Anytime during this conversation, please feel free. 740-383-9944, and we will put you up on the air. Steve Cannon's the guest here, talking current events. Aside
Scott,
from
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Let's look at the election again.
Yes.
John Kasich did very well in Iowa. Did not do that well in New Hampshire.
Backwards.
Any thought as to why?
I think he did well in New Hampshire, not well in Iowa.
Okay, all right,
yeah,
change
we'll
that.
Flip that. But yeah, my guess...
Actually, I think... Wait a minute, hold on a second. Was he not third in Iowa?
No, Rubio was third in Iowa.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Kasich finished, I think, in the bottom tier in Iowa, but he did very well in New Hampshire, finished second. But not doing so well in the polls in nationwide or in South Carolina right now. Now, interestingly enough, my take on that is a pretty simple take, is that he didn't spend much time in Iowa, and he did 103 town halls in New Hampshire and spent quite a bit of his money there.
Yeah, and I'm hoping he'll do it here in Pennsylvania also.
If he makes it to Super Tuesday, which most likely he will.
Okay.
But how's he going to do in South Carolina?
Well, very honestly, because President George W. has joined his brother in South Carolina, and because Trump has apparently strong numbers, I'm not really sure how well he can do. But I guess we can't tell until we get the primary results in, you know?
Well, I think it's going to... I think it's probably going to be Trump unless something major happens in South Carolina. But, again, it's going to be who finishes second. Now, it was Kasich in New Hampshire because he spent a lot of money and he did a lot of town halls. But South Carolina is Bush country, and I think they like Rubio there. And I know Cruz is campaigning hard in South Carolina. So if they come in and finish second, I think that's going to blow them by Kasich quite a bit. And I also think that Rubio, certainly if he's able to finish second, is going to blow by a lot of them because he finished a strong, or Cruz, because of their strong finishes in Iowa.
Because of the anti-government attitudes or the anti-system attitudes that seem to be existing in this country today, if it came down to an election between Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, who do you think would take the prize?
If it were held today?
What do you think?
If the election was held today?
You're cutting out on me.
No. You're saying if the election was held today and it was Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, right?
Yes.
Okay. Let me think on that for a second. What do you think, Sean?
Ooh, that's a good question. Right now, you know, everybody's feeling the burn. I'm going to have to go with Donald Trump on that one.
You know, I think Bernie would win, and I'll tell you why. And this is where I think a fatal mistake, and this is just an opinion of an observer of what's going on. For some reason, this 74-year-old self-proclaimed Democratic Socialist is getting 84% of the young Democratic vote. And I'm not really sure why that is. And Bernie Sanders, because heavens knows the Clintons would be into getting into his past heavy, have not found anything really horrible to come at him with. And I think a fatal mistake is being made in these debates. Because when we get to the main election, Hillary and Bernie have went after each other, but nothing horrible. You can't take any of those clips and really diminish anybody. When you call somebody a nasty liar, when Donald Trump calls Ted Cruz a nasty liar, and Ted Cruz or George W. Bush, as you said in the beginning of this, and Jeb Bush call him a showman, a theatrical guy, they're going to have a hard time in their own party organizing, I think, harder than the Democrats would in this particular election. Who do you think would win?
One of the interesting things about Trump for me, and I'm hoping that if it comes down to the wire and he winds up being president, that this actually happens. This election year is a lot like the election years that went on during the 19th century in this country and during the early part of the 20th century. It is hot, it is heavy, it is full of invective, and it's a lot of friction between candidates and between parties in this. I'm just hoping that if Trump is the president, that in fact all of the theatrics that we are seeing now is merely to draw attention to him and his candidacy, and if he becomes president, that in fact he will have a circle of advisors who will keep that theatrical nature that is his under some degree of control. Because I don't think any president, Ronald Reagan included, and John Kennedy, did not move until they consulted their people, their cabinet as well, before they did or said anything. So what's the chance of that happening if Trump became president? Sean, what do you think?
Well, now, wait, see, who do you think Trump would beat Sanders?
Yes.
No, I'm Steve.
I'm saying if Trump beat Sanders, would the theatrics that we have been seeing over this last phase of the election, is it just showmanship to, in fact, get our attention? And will he, in fact, when he becomes president, act presidential and be sure that his advisors, counselors, and cabinet, in fact, offer their opinions before he makes a decision?
Right. I'm with you on the. I'm just asking, who do you think would win if the election was held today?
Well, that's really hard to say, because the under 35 vote seems to be, and even under 25 vote seems to be, supporting Bernie Sanders. Now, what's the reason behind that? I'm not sure. The educational system, lack of knowledge, not understanding the Republic, not understanding our history. I'm not sure really what it's all about. I think it's also on both sides about a diminishing middle class. But very honestly, I'm not sure. As Sean pointed out, I don't think I could make a call at this point as to how the country would go.
It would be interesting, but you know, I think it's interesting, and Sean, come to this question in a second that Steve just asked you, but what I think is very interesting is that, have you noticed that no matter where Donald Trump is, whether it's Iowa or New Hampshire or right now in South Carolina, or even in the national polls, and it is only a primary right now, but do you notice his numbers really never go up or down? They're usually in the 30% mark, between 25 and 35%. Now, what I'm really confused about, like Bernie in New Hampshire was 60%, and in Iowa, he was at about 50%. I don't know, because when the Republican race started out with about 17 candidates, and as all of the candidates have left, Trump's numbers don't get bigger. The governors have numbers got bigger. Rubio's numbers go up. Cruz's numbers have obviously went up, but Trump's don't. So this leads me back to the point: is Trump about a 35% niche market? And really, if let's say everybody dropped out on the Republican side except George W. Jeb Bush and Donald Trump, would it be 60-35 Bush?
Sean, you first.
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know.
Anti-establishment seems to be the order of the day, both on the Democratic side and the Republican side. So it is really hard to say.
But, you know, hasn't it been interesting to watch? We started with 17 candidates, and as they have all dropped out, their people have sprinkled into the governors and Rubio and Cruz. But Donald's numbers really don't change. And as long as you still have five other candidates, it's a spread marketplace. Who is going to drop out that's going to help Donald's cause? Because I don't think Bush's people are going to go there. I don't think Kasich's people are going to go there. I don't think Rubio's people are going to go there. I don't think Ben Carson's people are going to go there. Cruz, I don't think so anymore after the remarks he's made about Cruz. Who would go to Trump if they drop out?
That's a very good point. And that would hold those numbers stagnant, which means that we're looking at about 30-40% of the Republican Party or the voters in general supporting Trump, and over 60% of the voters in general supporting Bernie Sanders. And you know, the question I guess I have, and I'm not prepared to answer this, but has that younger generation been educated to believe that, in fact, the government should, in fact, be giving us more than they are, above and beyond what they are supposed to be doing according to the Constitution? I'm curious, what do you guys think about that?
I don't, you know, it's kind of, we're going to get a call here, so hopefully this will be somebody else's opinion as well. But let's take the call, and then we'll come back with our opinions.
Good, good.
Hey, caller, you're on the line. Go ahead.
I think one of the problems that, excuse me a second there, choked on my own voice.
You were okay. So excited to talk.
Yeah, I guess. My daughter is a big supporter. She sent in for her Keep the Burn thing and sent $10 to Bernie. Her thing is that Bernie is an exciting guy in that he's bringing different ideas to it. She's 47. Her friends and all are pretty much in agreement. Bernie's the soup of the day, if you want to look at it that way. He's just somebody new, somebody exciting. To me, he reminds me a bit of Ross Perot, in that you know, he's come in with a different idea and generated a lot of hype and a lot of followers. I think the Trump supporters are simply the people that liked The Apprentice. I can't imagine any other reason other than they liked him firing people.
Well, now hold on, caller, because this is an interesting question, because I, and Steve, I don't know if you like Donald Trump or not. I don't think we've gotten there yet. But if you do, I'm going to ask Sean the same question, because I know Sean likes Donald Trump. Sean, our caller there said that the only reason basically people would support him is they like The Apprentice and they like him firing people. Why do you like Donald Trump?
Well, I mean, he does have an interesting background. I mean, he's a billionaire. He is a good businessman. He certainly knows about money. So I don't think it's, yes, he is a reality star. But I don't think that's what people always see him at. They see him at as maybe possibly if we get somebody in there that does not has never been into politics, maybe he could change the maybe he could change something.
Steve, to you.
I think Sean has a good idea, and in fact I think he's right on the money. There are a lot of people who support Donald Trump, I think, who believe that he is such an outsider, if you will, and such a good businessman, that in fact maybe the business of running government will become more economical and leave the door open for those of us in the middle class to in fact do better, and for our country to also be better defended, because that happens to be one of the talking points that Trump has been into for a long time. Now, whether that's going to, if there is a Trump presidency, if that will become a reality is yet to be seen, and it's yet to be seen whether our fellow voters will feel the same way.
Caller, I'll give you the final word on that.
Does anyone really think that Trump is interested in them as a person, as a group? Trump is interested in Trump. That's my view of him. He's an egomaniac. I did hear one rumor, now this is a joke, that if Trump is elected, members of the Ku Klux Klan will no longer have to pay taxes.
Well, it's an interesting time right now.
It is.
Thank you, caller.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
And that was a joke. I don't, you know.
One of the more exciting elections in recent history, I'll tell you that much.
Well, it is, but you know, it comes back to the, what were we talking, boy, I'll tell you, my brain went there. We were about to get into something there before the call. By the way, if you do want to call in, we have about 12 minutes left. Steve Cannon, Sean Kraft here with Scott Spears, 740-383-9944 if you want to get in on this. But we were talking about, I know what we were talking about. Does the government give people too much, or should they give them more? That was kind of the essence of where we were going.
Yes, absolutely, and that's kind of Bernie Sanders' thing.
Right. It's kind of interesting because if you go back and look in this country, and I wonder, back in the, and I'm talking after Franklin Roosevelt, if you go back into the 40s and 50s, college was about $25 a quarter. Now, that's what he talks a lot about, and I think that is what is appealing to college campuses, and I'm not sure why the cost of college has skyrocketed, because it would seem to me that now more people need to go to college than were needing to go then. Why has the price of college gone up so much?
I have no answer. I haven't been to college in a very long time.
Right, and I think that's what people are rallying against. I don't know that... I don't know. It's a very strange thing, because when you get to government, it all depends on what you want to insert your opinion in. Because obviously, as the President of the United States, you are the chief executive. You have to deal with the other two branches, and of course the Supreme Court, which is a whole nother ball of wax right now. But you have to deal with the two branches. Now, it seems to me that Trump, as Steve said there, one of his things, or one of the things we believe he will do, is beef up the military. Now, beefing up the military costs money. Money is given to the government through taxes. So, you can take the money that's coming in through taxes and you can beef up the military. I don't think Bernie would do that. I think Bernie would want to try to make college free, try to continue on with the universal health care program, something different than Obamacare, apparently he's saying. You know, I've never known, this may be the most profound statement I'll ever make, I've never known or heard about any of the 44 presidents we ever had who didn't spend all the tax money plus more that they were given. It's just what they spend it on.
That's a good point. On the other hand, though, have we, over the past 20 years or maybe even 40 years, wasted a lot of money that we could have used more economically? By virtue of the military, intelligence, the infrastructure, and supporting business, business that will bring jobs to various communities across this country.
Well, you know,
taxing the very rich and giving the tax money to people who are less fortunate, like myself in the lower end of the middle class, I'm not sure I like that. I like the idea of making sure that our elected officials bringing jobs to our area. I am, being third-generation immigrant stock. I want to use the wonderful freedoms, economically and others, of the United States to allow me to make a decent living. I really don't want the government to give it to me.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I think we just have to look at time here now in this country, and the last 20 years is a good time frame to look at it. Now, under Bill Clinton, and anybody can correct me if I'm wrong here, under Bill Clinton, the unemployment rate was down around 3%, and there was a surplus in the budget for the first time in a long time. Under Bush, unemployment rose to about 8.5%, and under Obama, we're down back to now about 5%, but we're getting a call, so we're going to take that, and then we can answer that question. Hey, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, Sean, several months ago, maybe a lot of months ago, you had Jesse Ventura on, and one of the things he said that he thought should happen was the limiting term limits in Congress and putting a ceiling on their earnings. That would generate a lot of money, because you wouldn't have the retirement issue of all the Congress people.
That's a good thing. Hey, thank you for bringing that up.
Another good point, based on what Jesse and this gentleman said, was maybe we would start having citizen representatives as opposed to individuals who, because of the money and other reasons, are in the job way too long. What do you think, caller?
I think they've left us, but okay. I think that's very interesting. 740-383-9944, we've got about 7 minutes left. But I think the question beckons again, why under George W. Bush, and I guess that's who we're talking about today because he's down there campaigning in South Carolina, did unemployment have its greatest rise?
A question I can't answer.
Because George W. Bush's theory was give tax breaks to the wealthy. And I'm not sure why that, I think we're getting the caller back here, so we
can
come in.
That's indicative, if I may inject.
Go ahead.
That is kind of indicative of what I perceive as being Bernie Sanders, how do I put this properly. I knew the phrase, but it's fleeted from my mind. The economic or class warfare that's going on in this election cycle is indicative of class warfare that's been going on for a long time. If my answer has been and still is, put people in office who will bring jobs to the areas that need the most. That's the key. Well, anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's good. It's very interesting. What do you think, and two quick questions here, then we're going to go to the caller. What do you think of the fact that one of the things Bernie has talked about, and I haven't heard this for a long time, hiring people to work on the infrastructure of this country, the roadways, the bridges, things of that, because I think those jobs are currently needed, and the fact that he also, we talk about Trump being an outsider, that Bernie is the only candidate who has not taken money from a super PAC. Average a donation, $27. Who will Bernie Sanders be beholden to if he gets into office?
Well, if that in fact is the guidelines by which we go, he will be beholden to no one, allegedly. But then we do not know who he'll be beholden to until he actually becomes the president.
That's right. Caller, go ahead.
Well, to add on to what I said about limiting the term limits and doing away with their retirement, you would also not have all the pork belly. You do for me, I do for you, and this would create a lot more monetary gain for cities and states because they wouldn't be raping the cities and states to send money to the government for all these different lobbyists in Congress. So I think it would be a snowball effect, and like Steve said, you would have more people getting involved in government, and there would be more control at the local and state level rather than the federal government.
You know, interesting to note that I got a call from a campaign worker for one of the candidates. I will not name the candidate, but when I talked about Bernie Sanders on the phone with this fundraiser being a Democratic Socialist, he corrected me immediately by saying, no, he's not a Democratic Socialist, he's an out-and-out communist. So I don't know whether that was scare tactics on his part or whether he really believed it or not, or whether, in fact, that's really true.
You know something that's kind of interesting? Every time I hear, because, and this is just, we had our local auditor on about a year ago, and they were talking about Kasich, because Kasich, every time Kasich's in a debate, you hear him talk about this $2 billion surplus in Ohio. He came from $8 billion in the hole to $2 billion in the black. And how did he do that? What amazing thing did Kasich do here in Ohio that created that? Well, it's kind of interesting because what he did, according to the auditor, and I think they would know, they see where the money goes, that it used to be taxes were collected from the cities and counties in Ohio and sent to the state level. And then the state would give back what was left after they paid their bills, after the state paid their bills. They would send back what was left to the counties to fix roads and tear down old houses and fix water problems or whatever's going on. Kasich doesn't do that. Kasich, when the tax money comes in, they pay the state's bills, they send the counties back nothing. So that's where the surplus came from, according to the auditor. And if that is true, then and when the caller says that a person like Bernie Sanders is going to take power away from the state, I don't know. It seems to me like powers are being taken away from the city to create surpluses. So if that went to a national level, wouldn't it apply to states as well? Doesn't the federal government use states' tax dollars to pay bills?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they do.
Absolutely.
So if you just don't send as much back to the state, isn't that how you create a surplus in the federal government?
Well, that's true too. But then Sanders, would he not dictate how much we in the cities, states, counties, townships have to pay the federal government?
We're under a minute now, and maybe this is the question. If Donald Trump wanted to beef up the military, where does that money come from?
Well, it would hopefully come from any excesses we may have.
You know, we haven't had a war tax in a long time, or a defense tax. I wonder if the country would be okay with that.
Deficit spending is a necessity in many cases. Deficit spending is not a good thing if it, in fact, it is done recklessly, if it is done with a specific function in mind, i.e. the military. What do you think? Is that a good way to deal in deficit spending?
It'll have to go till the next time. We're out of time.
All right.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Scott.
Marion, Ohio, the place to talk. From broadcasting legends Charlie Evers and Marianne Michaels,